It's an honor to win this award for the third time. 2020 was definitely a crazy year, filled with lots of change, growth, some amazing, memorable moments. 180 straight days of having my nose hair scraped, playing for, you know, very little fans or no stands the entire season. I got engaged.
Stop. What the hell are you talking about?
And I played some of the best football in my career. So I'd like to thank first and foremost my teammates for their support, their inspiration, protection, the incredible play on the field, the coaching staff for their efforts to make this thing fun every single week. The energy, the positivity, and the daily presentations really kept us going. Off the field, I got a great group of people that support me. So I'd like to thank my team, off the field, Ryan, Tommy, Lennon, Rebecca, Adam, Oliver and Emil, Debbie, Jody Foster,
hello, Clarice,
Chas, Ed B, The Dungeon, Papa, Andy and Sue, Dr. E, the Pygmalia crew, Dave and Todd, Torpedo, Joey, AJ, Pat, all the boys there, my fiance. They only gave me a minute to do this, so I just need to wrap this up real quick. There's so many more people that I'm thankful for, but just encourage people to read books, to meditate, speak things to life, manifest the desires of your heart, question everything, and spread love and positivity. Thank you so much.
Maybe one of the weirdest speeches you'll ever hear an NFL MVP make. Welcome in. It is the Super Bowl weekend edition of the Doug Russell Podcast. Glad to have you along. Congratulations to Aaron Rodgers on a number of different fronts, I suppose. But we certainly weren't expecting that kind of speech from Aaron. We were expecting him to win the MVP. We were expecting him to etch himself into immortality once again as a three-time NFL MVP. That matches Brett Favre. Brett won his three in a row. Of course, Aaron Rodgers with the 2020 award along with 2014 and 2011. So three very obviously non-consecutive seasons, but yeah, then there was that other thing. And nice shout out to Jody Foster, by the way, as well. The complete list, by the way, of your NFL Honors Awards winners, your Rookie of the Year, Justin Herbert, Los Angeles Chargers quarterback, your Defensive Player of the Year. It wasn't the guy who should have won it. Instead, it was Aaron Donald, who is a future Hall of Famer, and he won his third. And he matches T.J. Watt's brother, J.J. Watt, for three NFL Defensive Player of the Year awards. Except for the fact that T.J. Watt should have gotten it. His statistics were better in every measured category than Aaron Donald's. And T.J. Watt, I suspect, at some point will be a Defensive Player of the Year. He's had a marvelous career. But hey, the Packers at least got Kevin King and Vince Beagle out of that. No, I'm not going to let that go. Your Offensive Rookie of the Year, obviously Justin Herbert as well. Now, here's where it gets a little bit interesting. Your Offensive Player of the Year, not your MVP, your Offensive Player of the Year, Derrick Henry, which I have no problem with. Derrick Henry had a fantastic season. Derrick Henry went over 2,000 yards. Derrick Henry was easily and far and away the best running back in the NFL this year, and had a tremendous impact on his team, the Tennessee Titans. So if he's your Offensive Player of the Year, and it's not Aaron Rodgers, why does Aaron Rodgers then get the MVP award? And riddle me this, if Derrick Henry is your Offensive Player of the Year, and your other vote-getters in the MVP award were Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes, how does Derrick Henry, both of those other guys, offensive players, yes, how does Derrick Henry not get a single vote for MVP, but he's your Offensive Player of the Year? It's like, well, we can't give you the MVP because you're not a quarterback, but we'll give you this as a consolation prize? I have no idea. Your Defensive Rookie of the Year, Washington defensive end Chase Young, no real surprise there, the former Ohio State Buckeye. Here's your Pro Football Hall of Fame class of 2021. I love this because Charles Woodson gets in on the 10-year anniversary of the Packers winning Super Bowl 45. I thought that was poignant, well done, and really everything coming full circle in every possible way. He was a lock. Peyton Manning was a lock. Some other guys that got in that weren't a lock. Drew Pearson finally got in. He'd been upset about not getting in years past, but Drew Pearson, the former Dallas Cowboys, great wide receiver in the 1970s. Drew Pearson gets into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. The reason that Leroy Butler didn't get in is because of John Lynch. John Lynch got in this time around. I suspect that Leroy Butler, one of the best safeties in NFL history, he'll get in the class of 2022, but I'm not surprised that John Lynch got in before Leroy. They're only starting to come around to that whole position now. So you put John Lynch in, and right now it is safe to say that the best player at that position, the best safety in NFL history that is not in the Pro Football Hall of Fame right now is Leroy Butler. So I suspect he'll probably get in next year. He was a finalist, obviously, this year. Calvin Johnson got in, played on some terrible Lions teams, but was a fantastic, singular talent. Didn't play that long, got sick of losing, got banged up a lot during his career. But Calvin Johnson, a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame class of 2021. Also former offensive lineman Alan Faneca, former head coach and quarterback for the Raiders, Tom Flores. He won a couple of Super Bowls as a coach. Plus, he was a player, so Tom Flores gets into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I thought that was a little bit overdue as well. Longtime scout Bill Nunn also getting in as well. So congratulations to the Pro Football Hall of Fame class of 2021. Your Sportsmanship Award winner, Carolina Panthers quarterback Teddy Bridgewater. Your coach of the year, Kevin Stefanski from the Cleveland Browns, so no real surprise there. Matt LaFleur did get a couple of votes for that, so maybe next year, maybe the year after that. I think that Matt LaFleur certainly is deserving of that, but this year was Kevin Stefanski's year. I don't have any question about that. Your Walter Payton NFL Man of the Year, Seahawks quarterback Russell Wilson, the former Wisconsin Badger. The Deacon Jones Award winner. That's why T.J. Watt should have gotten the Defensive Player of the Year award, but didn't. He wins the award for getting the most sacks in the NFL this year. T.J. Watt from the Pittsburgh Steelers, from the Pewaukee Pirates, and, of course, the Wisconsin Badgers as well. And my favorite award of the night, because it should now be named for this guy. So you've got the Deacon Jones Award. You've got the Art Rooney Sportsmanship Award. You know, sometimes you've got awards that are named after guys. The Comeback Player of the Year Award went to, of course, Washington quarterback Alex Smith. There was one guy who didn't vote for Alex Smith. That guy should get his vote taken away from him. Alex Smith, because of a freak accident on the field, when he got sacked, he almost died. He almost lost his leg. He had 17 surgeries. This is a guy whose leg was black. You know, take a look at, if you're a Caucasian, take a look at your skin. Imagine that it was so infected, that it was so damaged. Any one of your limbs. Take a look at your leg right now. Imagine it coal black. That's what Alex Smith's leg looked like. And he worked and worked and worked. He didn't have to. He's played in the NFL for 16 years. He could have, and I think just about everyone else would have, just retired. You know what? You had a good career. Number one overall pick. Never won an MVP award. But look, anybody who lasts 15 years, 16 years in the NFL, you're good. Got nothing to apologize for. But he came back to be a backup quarterback. Name the award after him. Name the award after Alex Smith. Just an incredible feat, and congratulations to him. I had hoped to be doing this show from Tampa, of course, but the Packers lost, and we're in a pandemic, so hopefully next year we can come to you from Radio Row at Super Bowl 56 in Los Angeles instead of the usual Doug Russell Podcast Studios. As far as the game itself, I'm torn. I don't have the Tom Brady hate that so many have. I love to see excellence, and he's the best there ever was at winning. He's got that intangible. He's demanding, but it's demanding to make you and the team better. The Buccaneers were a sloppy team last year. Brady comes in and they're the least penalized team in the league. That's not an accident. Jameis Winston was an interception machine a year ago. Despite the likes of like Chris Godwin and Mike Evans to throw to, Brady comes in and gets everyone on the same page. That is not an accident. He's able to lure Gronk out of retirement. He gets Antonio Brown to come in and, for his sake, hopefully behave. Tom Brady makes everyone else around him better. That is not an accident. That's what makes Tom Brady the greatest quarterback of all time. Because that is what leads to the rings. As I record this, he has six. By the time you listen to this, he may have seven. He will have played in 10 Super Bowls at the end of this weekend. Now, the fact that he makes everyone around him better, it's not necessarily indicative of how Super Bowl 55 is going to go. It's not gonna, I don't know if the Buccaneers are going to win the game, but I just think that the fact that they're there is amazing in and of itself. Did anyone predict, I mean literally anyone predict, that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were going to play in Super Bowl 55? I mean, nobody, even with Tom Brady. Okay, I didn't think so. We're seeing maybe, though, the next Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes. A winner with a better arm than Brady, and we don't know where his career will take him. Maybe in 10 years we'll be talking about Patrick Mahomes as the greatest quarterback of all time. I don't know that we won't. I don't know that we will. I think the odds are stacked against anyone, including Mahomes, for that. But if there's anyone right now that's in the NFL that could be that guy, it's probably him. He's already got one ring. He's already got an MVP. He's got a rocket for an arm. He's the most popular athlete in Kansas City history, a history that includes the likes of George Brett. He's the most popular guy in town by a wide margin from everyone that I know that's in Kansas City. So the Chiefs come into the game favored by 3. The Buccaneers are at home. We'll see what happens. We've got the prop bets, though, as well. Something that I'm as interested in as the game itself. Because, look, the way the game goes, sometimes there's upsets. Sometimes it's like we were talking about Super Bowl 45, which we'll get to in a couple of minutes as well. If you go back and watch the entirety of Super Bowl 45, which was 10 years ago this weekend, that was a sloppy game. Jordy Nelson dropped like two really easy, important passes. James Jones was a butterfingers in that game. The only receiver that was good that day for the Packers was Greg Jennings. Ben Roethlisberger threw a couple of interceptions. Pittsburgh turned the ball over 3 critical times. It was kind of a crappy game overall, as far as from an aesthetically pleasing perspective. We think about the win here in Wisconsin because it was something to celebrate. The Packers got a trophy. The confetti fell from the roof of AT&T Stadium. That's what you remember. You remember the touchdowns. Do you remember hanging on for dear life at the end of that game? I don't know. Maybe you do. I remember the Greg Jennings touchdowns. I remember the Jordy Nelson touchdown. That's what I remember in that game. So again, that's the game itself. But as far as the prop bets, you know, and these are things that you can actually bet on. Now, obviously this is even money, but you can bet on heads versus tails on the opening coin toss. What will happen first, a sack or a touchdown? Will the game be tied after 0-0? Total passing yards by Patrick Mahomes, the over-under is 331.5. Total touchdown passes by Patrick Mahomes, the over-under is 2.5. Receptions by Tyreek Hill, the over-under is 6.5. Receptions by Travis Kelce, the over-under is 7.5. Team to score the longest touchdown, Chiefs or Buccaneers. Longest reception by Tyreek Hill, over-under 27.5 yards. First turnover of the game, will it be a fumble or an interception? The first score of the game will be a touchdown, or will it be a field goal or safety? Will either team score 3 straight times? I don't think so. I don't like that one. The team to make the first field goal of the game, Chiefs or Buccaneers? That's impossible. It's impossible to guess. Total passing yards by Tom Brady. The over-under is 306.5. I'll take the under on that, and I think I'm going to take the over on Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes' over-under is 331.5. That's a lot of yards, but he does have Tyreek Hill. Total completions by Tom Brady, over or under 25.5. I'll take the under. Receptions by Mike Evans, over under 4.5. My gut says the over. Receptions by Chris Godwin, over under 5.5. I take the over there. Total rushing yards by Leonard Fournette, the over under is 48.5. I think that's, to me, that's where I think this game could be won or lost by the Buccaneers. If Leonard Fournette goes off and gets the over 48.5, and they can control the clock, I like Tampa Bay's chances. Total sacks in the game, the over-under is 4. So, for what it's worth, again, but my X factor, again, I don't make predictions, but the over-under on Leonard Fournette, if he can go significantly over that 48.5, I really do like the Buccaneers' chances today. Then again, I still like the over-under on how long the national anthem is going to be. The first commercial category, will it be a beer commercial, car commercial, technology commercial, or whatever? The first song that The Weeknd will play at halftime, what quarter will we see the most points? So all of those things are prop bets that you can bet on. So we'll see on all of that. Staying on Super Bowl 55, on my weekend show on 97.3 The Game in Milwaukee, Chuck Garbedian and I, we had on a longtime national writer. He was a writer in Dallas, writer in New York City, and now a podcaster. His name is Gary Myers. He's got a great podcast series on Tom Brady. You can find it like you can find this podcast on iHeart, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find Gary Myers' podcast, which is titled simply Tom Brady GOAT. And we asked Gary on our weekend show on 97.3 The Game in Milwaukee, we asked him how Tom Brady was able to so seamlessly go from one system in New England to another in Tampa Bay without missing a beat.
One of the reasons he left New England is he just got tired of Belichick. Early on in his career, you know, Tom realized as he won three Super Bowls in his first 4 years and Belichick continued to pick on him in practice and in meetings, he realized that what Belichick was doing, and since Tom has pretty thick skin and is a good soldier when it comes to this stuff, Belichick realized, you know, if I can get on this three-time Super Bowl champion and he doesn't complain, then there's no other player on the team that can complain about my coaching methods. And Tom was good for that, for about the first 10 years of his career. And then I think he started to think, you know what, I've accomplished a lot here. I've really helped this coach. You know, maybe I deserve just, you know, a break once or twice a year in practice where if I screw up a throw, he's not getting all over me. And so, you know, as it evolved through the 2019 season and you throw in the thing where Tom was never getting a fair market value contract because he wanted the money to be used to keep the team of Super Bowl caliber. And he looked around the team and didn't see, oh, where's all my money going to? Certainly not to wide receivers because we don't have anybody here. So I think he got burnt out on the whole Patriot way. And Bruce Arians is just the complete opposite. And the players love him and they love playing for him. And I think the contrast for Tom has just been a breath of fresh air. He feels liberated somewhat. Now, I thought through the first 12 games of the season this year that it wasn't working because Bruce was trying to get Tom to play his offense rather than, you know, you sign a six-time Super Bowl champion, you should adjust your offense to what that guy does best. He's been more successful than you. But it wasn't working that way, and they got it together during their bye week, and they've been on fire with seven straight victories ever since the bye. And I just think that Tom really enjoys the atmosphere in Tampa and not constantly walking on eggshells around Belichick.
Former Dallas Morning News and New York Daily News football writer Gary Myers joining us here on 97.3 The Game on Sports and Stuff Saturday, his new iHeartRadio podcast entitled The GOAT, Tom Brady. I want to ask you this because this is the same question that I asked of Aaron Rodgers and about Aaron Rodgers during his last, the only time that he's ever had a coaching change when it was Mike McCarthy and then ultimately it was Matt LaFleur who became the Packers head coach. I asked the question of Rodgers, and now I'm asking the question to you of Brady. Would he rather be coached or affirmed?
Tom likes to be coached, and he doesn't have any problem with that. I just think that he felt that he had earned a certain respect that he wasn't getting from Belichick. But Tom likes to be coached. I think all the great players like to be coached. They just don't want the coach to be standing out there and telling them, you know, you're great. There's always something to learn. There's always something you can get better at. And if you get complacent, your career starts going backwards. So, yeah. And Aaron is probably the same way. I mean, I don't know him. I've been around him a few times, but I can't say that I know him at all. But just, you know, judging him from a distance, I think he's open to being coached. But, you know, Brady likes to have input, and I know that Rodgers does also. And one of the things that fell apart in New England is that in 2019, I think everybody there realized it, although we all didn't know it at the time, that it was definitely going to be Brady's last year there. And I think they shut him out on a lot of things that they were doing knowing that he wasn't going to stay. And that's probably not the right approach. And I think that LaFleur, again, just from what I've understood about that situation, I think, you know, he realizes he's got a quarterback that's accomplished a lot more than he has. And it would be silly not to embrace any suggestions.
Gary Myers with us. The iHeart podcast is called The GOAT, Tom Brady. When you look at Thomas Edward Patrick Brady, one of the things I find fascinating is the fact that he leaves New England and goes to Tampa Bay. And we've seen it with other quarterbacks, other great quarterbacks. When you've looked at Peyton Manning and he goes from the Colts to Denver. You look at Joe Namath, he goes from the Jets to the Rams. Mm-hmm. You go all the way back and look at Unitas, he ended his career with the San Diego Chargers. It's fascinating right. to see someone of his age, his caliber, his experience, go to a franchise and not only play well with them, but lead them to a Super Bowl.
Yeah, and you'd have to say that, you know, Peyton did really well in Denver, got to 2 Super Bowls in 4 years, and won the second one in his final year, although he was kind of along for the ride there, if you remember. He was really compromised physically. But I'll tell you this, and I'm not just saying this because of what's happening now. But before the season, I was telling people that I thought the Bucs were the team in the NFC that if there was a team that was going to get better as the season went on, I thought it would be them. Now, I wasn't predicting that they would get to the Super Bowl, but I really thought they were going to be serious Super Bowl contenders and that it might not get off to a pretty start. But I thought as they get acclimated to each other, you know, Tom to the coaching staff, Tom to his receivers with him, Arians finding out what Tom liked to do, that I thought they were a team that could be dangerous in December and January. And that was a team ready to win. They have a real good defense, as we saw last weekend in the game against the Packers. And it's the best skill position players Tom has had, at least since 2007, when he had Randy Moss and Wes Welker, and you know, top to bottom, it might be a better offense than he had, skill position wise, at least in New England. So, I thought they were a team that had a chance. Again, picking him to get to the Super Bowl, winning it, you know, that's like throwing darts at the board. You can pick any team, and then maybe they'll get hot. But I thought they had a chance to do it. So I'm not really surprised by this.
Gary Myers joining us. You can find his iHeartRadio podcast, The GOAT, Tom Brady, again on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your iHeartRadio podcasts. Final thing that I've got for you, Gary, is how much more special would a championship this year be for Brady to do it without Belichick, considering how their relationship ended?
You know, that is a really good question. And I asked exactly the same question to Tom's father the other day, because I had him on as a guest on my podcast. And I'm wondering that also. And his father didn't really give me any insightful answer. He says, you know, they're all different. And, you know, and Eli Manning always used to say about interceptions, each one tells its own story. And I think each of Tom's championships has told their own story. And at the time, the one you're experiencing is always the most satisfying because you're in the moment. And I think if he wins it in Tampa, considering, you know, the Bucs have been the losingest team probably in sports history, you know, only that one year of great success in 2002. So to take a team where that had no history of success, and he's really changed the perspective on the Bucs, and he's changed the culture within the locker room for sure. I think this one would be incredibly, incredibly satisfying. Now, during the Deflategate stuff, he won 2 out of 3 years with that stuff going on. I think as a way of sticking it to the league and to Goodell, that was probably incredibly satisfying. The first one, which came out of nowhere, was his greatest accomplishment. But, you know, certainly if he finishes this off against the Chiefs a week from tomorrow, considering it's been a pandemic, getting to learn new teammates, a new coaching staff, living in a different area of the country, I think this will be a great accomplishment, and probably I would put that number 2 on his list besides winning the first one, just because he was basically nobody when he took over in New England when Bledsoe got hurt, and he was a game manager for most of that season, but then had the game winning drive in the Super Bowl with, you know, a minute to go. I think that one was probably his greatest accomplishment. But what he's done with this franchise this year would probably be number two on the list that I would compile.
Well, one of the fascinating tenets of this upcoming Super Bowl is the fact that you have Patrick Mahomes, who's a completely different style quarterback and sure. runs a way different offense than what they run in Tampa Bay. And it'll be interesting to see the stark difference between the two quarterbacks and how they manage their teams and operate the offenses in Super Bowl 55.
Yeah, you know, they are completely different. I mean, Patrick Mahomes, clearly to me, is the best quarterback in the NFL. And their style of offense is just, I mean, I almost think they're unstoppable. And they're relentless. So if the pressure in this game is not on Brady, I don't think. The pressure to me is strictly on the Bucs defense. They have to find a way to slow them down. And if I can just make a comparison for you, I thought about this last night. The Giants played the Patriots in the final game of the 2007 season. If you remember, the Patriots are undefeated in that game, in that regular season. And the Giants already had their playoff spot and their seeding locked up. But Tom Coughlin decided to go all out in that game, and they nearly beat him. They lost 38-35. And that gave the Giants a lot of confidence when they wound up playing the Patriots in the Super Bowl about a month later. They had tape to rely on. They had the experience of the game to rely on, and they were incredibly confident going into that game. My comparison here is on November 29th, the Chiefs beat the Bucs 27-24. They were ahead of them 17-0 after one quarter. If you remember, Tyreek Hill had 203 yards receiving and two touchdowns in the first quarter alone, and they were single covering him for some reason. That made about as much sense as Matt LaFleur kicking a field goal last week. But
don't remind us.
Yeah, I know. In the last three quarters of the game, I felt that the Bucs figured out how to slow down the Chiefs' offense. So I draw that analogy to the Giants in the last game of the 07 season, that the experience of playing against that high-powered Chiefs offense that plays at a different speed than everybody else, at least now the Bucs say, you know, we've been there, we've gone against it. We had success the last three quarters holding them to 10 points. We're just going to build on that and forget about anything we tried in the first quarter that didn't work. So I'm really interested to see how Todd Bowles, who wasn't a very good head coach with the Jets but is a really good defensive coordinator, I'm really curious to see what he learned from that first game, what he saw that they did well against Mahomes to shut them down basically for the last three quarters of that game, and whether that can continue in the Super Bowl. And that, to me, will be the key to the game.
Gary Myers with us. The GOAT, Tom Brady, is the iHeart podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts. On a completely different note, if you're a six-time Super Bowl champion, is there a favorite ring that you have out of all the jewelry that you've acquired?
You've seen that picture with Tom, you
yeah.
know, wanting those six rings.
Uh-huh.
I always think for these guys, the best one is the most recent one. And their favorite is the next one that they're always striving to get. But that's a pretty good collection he's got. And I was thinking it would be a hard time picking. I tell you this, in New England, I thought that Robert Kraft outdid himself, or did each ring that he got for the team was better than the one before.
Right.
So I think there'll be a lot of pressure on the owners in Tampa if they were able to win this game tomorrow. I mean, a week from tomorrow, to outdo anything Tom's gotten before. Let me ask you guys a question, okay?
Sure.
So a week. I don't know how much time you got here, but a week has gone by since that championship game.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard a good explanation yet why LaFleur didn't go for the touchdown? Because to me, it made zero sense. Just as he going for 2-point conversion in the third quarter made no sense. At the worst case scenario, if he goes for it on fourth down last week and he throws an incomplete pass in the end zone, Tampa's got to start at the 8-yard line. The Packers still have the 2-minute warning and 3 timeouts. I just can't figure out what he was doing. For a smart guy, that was really a dumb move.
I think you laid it out pretty well. Have we heard an explanation?
No.
Sure.
No.
It wasn't a good one.
No.
It didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
The math, you're right, the math doesn't work out for all of the reasons that you laid out. It was baffling, and it was a poorly coached game, in our opinion, and we were talking about it in the first hour of the show, on defense and on offense.
Oh, my goodness.
And it wound up costing Mike Pettine his job, and it should have.
Well, even if you look at the third down play, if Rodgers had tried to run into the corner of the end zone, even if he had gotten stopped on, let's say, the second or third yard line, even at that point, you're looking at a fourth down play that's still going to be inside the five. And again, you'd pin them back. If it doesn't convert on fourth down, they've got to go 97 yards. At least you've given your defense a chance with the two-minute warning and the three timeouts.
Absolutely. And if you watch that play, the third down play, over and over again from different angles, I think and Aaron's, you know, Aaron doesn't run like...
No, he's not a gazelle anymore, but...
But, you know, he only had to go... You figure he was probably standing at the 10 or 11 yard line when he realized there was, you know, just a wide patch of grass there. That from every angle I've looked at, I think he would have made it. At the very least, he would have gotten to the two. And then you're creating all kinds of possibilities of what you can run on fourth and two. And I, you know what? Watching Aaron after the game, and I watched that press conference like everybody else. I think the thought had to be going through his mind. So you're telling me, like, as if he's talking to LaFleur, you're telling me I'm about to win the MVP. I just had the best year of any quarterback in the league. And you wanted to put the game in the hands of the defense, trying to stop the greatest quarterback of all time from picking up one first down.
Yep.
And so you thought there was a better chance that our defense was going to stop them than me converting on that fourth and eight. And I think that hurt him to the core. And I don't know how he ever forgives LaFleur for that.
So you've been listening to sports talk radio in Wisconsin all week long, is what you're saying.
No, I haven't. But
but you're right. Everything that you just laid out, you're 100% correct. And we're living with it right now.
Yeah, I mean, these things are so hard to get over. You know, because I mean, I covered the league for 40 years, and I've been around, you know, I started pretty much in Dallas, and they were losing championship games the first few years I got there. And the hardest thing to me is when you come so close and you had your expectations were so high. And I know it's a long off season and time heals all wounds, apparently. But just to get back to that point, let's just say they have a good season, and I mean, would they sign off right now on fourth and eight, fourth and goal from the eight, down eight in a championship game? Would they sign off on, okay, we've done everything we can to get to that point again? I think you'd have to say yes, because it's just so hard to get to that point, right? Do you see what my point is?
100%.
Absolutely.
You got to go through the off season and training camp, and you got to hope you don't have injuries. You got to hope Aaron doesn't get hurt.
Breaks have got to go your way during the course of that 16-game season.
Right. Just to get back.
Right.
I think it's so hard mentally and physically just to get back to that point that you're fourth and goal on the eight with 2 minutes and change, down eight. I think any team in the league would sign off to have that opportunity. Now, obviously, you'd rather be up 7 points in that situation. But I'm just saying that it's so hard to get there that I think a lot of teams would say, you know, all right, we'll take our chances on everything going right, just to get to that point, even though we'd rather be up, we'll take our chances that we got the guy who just had an MVP season, finding a way to get us in the end zone and then a 2-point conversion to at least tie it up, and then maybe having a chance to win it in regulation if you make a defensive stop or win it in overtime. I don't know how teams get themselves geared back up after losing games like that. It's hard enough after you win and you achieve the ultimate to then come back and try to do it again, because obviously there's complacency.
Gary, are you there? Oh, there we go.
Yeah, can you still hear me?
Yeah, we just lost you. There's just a second to drop out or so.
Okay, I'll finish up here. All I was saying is that it's hard enough to after you win, to try to keep it going, because players get complacent, everybody wants to get paid. There's always all those kinds of problems. But at least you have the championship to show for it as you try to fight your way through it. And now the Packers have to do that, coming so close, but then not getting to the Super Bowl. These things are really hard to get over, and I wouldn't be surprised. They'll still make the playoffs next year, I would imagine, but I just think it's going to be really tough for them to get back to the point that they were at on Sunday afternoon.
Before we let you go, tell us about the podcast series, The Goat, Tom Brady. By the way, I just followed it, so you picked up one more. So there's that. Tell us about all of the chapters that you go through.
Yeah, the original series, which is 12 episodes, is really a journey through Tom's career from being a backup quarterback who never took a snap at quarterback on his winless high school freshman team, if you can imagine that, through going to Michigan and starting off seventh on the depth chart, being a sixth-round draft choice. And I just take you through his entire career, and I have all the interviews that I did for my Brady Manning book, which I supplemented with more current interviews. So the podcast is a narrative where I just kind of pop in these interviews at appropriate times. And now I've done, five bonus episodes, and there's going to be a sixth after the Super Bowl where they're more in real time about what's happened to him this season. And I started those in December when it became apparent, that they had a really good chance to make the playoffs. So, I have guests on those, like Eli will be next week, just talking about beating Brady twice in the Super Bowl. I have Tom's dad, Al Michaels. And then, just during the course of the season, you hear from, extensively from Tom and Peyton and Robert Kraft and Teddy Bruschi, Adam Vinatieri, Michael Strahan, Bill Parcells. So I think, if you're into football, you don't have to be a Brady fan necessarily, but it really tells the story of the first 20 years of this century as well, because clearly the Patriots were the dominant story. And then I really get into Spygate and Deflategate, and I hopefully shed some new light on that. So I think it's a fun listen. And, I know you don't have the traffic in Milwaukee that you have in New York. So I always tell people when you're sitting in traffic, it's a great thing to pass the time. But it really does make the car rides go faster, I can tell you that.
Gary Myers, again, you can find his podcast, Tom Brady, GOAT, on iHeart Podcasts or Apple or wherever you get your podcasts, and download the whole series. It's pretty fascinating stuff, and he goes into some pretty in-depth interviews as well. I've listened to the first two episodes and the last episode, and it's really, really compelling stuff. So I'd encourage you to if you're looking for a podcast and a good sports podcast, again, Tom Brady, GOAT, hosted by Gary Myers. All right, this weekend, it was 10 years ago when Aaron Rodgers went from talented youngster to legend.
Third and one. Rodgers, Jordy Nelson, touchdown, Green Bay. Perfect. Wallace, picked off, Nick Collins. Nick Collins on the return inside the 10, leaps for the touchdown. Approaching the 2-minute warning here in Arlington, over the middle. Greg Jennings. Tonight, second down and 11. Over the middle. Dangerous pass picked off. Intercepted by Jared Bush. Second and two. As we start the fourth quarter, Pittsburgh with the ball down by four. Mendenhall. Loss of football. Picked up by Bishop. And Pickett combined on the tackle to knock it out. And it's the third Steeler turnover of Super Bowl 45. Rodgers looking left, comes to his right. Jennings! Touchdown! The final snap of Super Bowl 45. The Green Bay Packers have won the Super Bowl. The Lombardi Trophy is coming home.
Fox Sports Television on the call. I was in Dallas that week for the Super Bowl. And if you were with me earlier this week, I was bemoaning that I couldn't find any of the interviews that I had taped while covering Super Bowl week. One of the great laments of my career. Well, this week I found some of them, not all of them. If I could go back and save that Jim Kelly interview and play that one for you and to see how it just completely disintegrated when Marissa Meyer walked by, I would play that for you. If I could, I cannot find it. But I did find some of the other ones, some of the interviews that I taped in person while covering Super Bowl week. The first one, leading up to the game, my interview with one of the guys that you just heard a moment ago alongside Joe Buck, Hall of Famer Troy Aikman. Troy, good to have you on.
Thank you. Good to be on.
Talk about this team that you've seen, I think it's been six consecutive weeks.
Yeah.
It seems as though you and Joe have become the exclusive television broadcasters for the Green Bay Packers.
Well, it sure seems that way, doesn't it? You know, we got on their bandwagon, their 15th game of the season there against the Giants, and they've been having to win all those games. They've won five in a row, as you know, and it's been fun to watch them. You know, they came into the season with high expectations and a great team, and all these injuries later, and a few bumps in the road, and some hiccups, and now they're where they thought they would be, or where they at least hoped they would be, and a lot of people thought they would be when the season started. And it's been a remarkable ride for them.
You've won three Super Bowls yourself. Can you recognize a Super Bowl champion when you see one on the field?
It's hard because each year, no matter how good of a team you had. And I say this from experience, there's adversity that you face. And so it's how do you plow through those times of adversity? I think when you look at the Packers, it was during that stretch when they lost to Detroit. Aaron Rodgers goes down. Then they're playing at New England. But New England, I think, was a turning point for them. And they used that as a real advantage to them. And so, you know, early on I thought, wow, this team's got the potential to be really good in a Super Bowl team. Then they went through a spell where you're like, I don't know, they're not playing quite as well as what maybe they could. And then when they started to get confidence and get some momentum behind them again, you know, having done each of their playoff games, each of those games, I thought they were the best team going into the game. And they've continued to get better and better and better, and that is the sign of a championship team.
You talk about some of the great quarterbacks right now that are playing, Manning, Breeze, Brady, certainly. Where does Aaron Rodgers stand right now in that pantheon?
I think he's right there with him, you know. And the only reason people don't immediately, you know, roll off their tongue Aaron Rodgers when they're asked about who the best quarterbacks are is because he has not yet won a world championship. I know Peyton Manning was considered by many to be the best in the league before he had won a world championship, but that doesn't happen that often that a player can be regarded in that light without having won a championship. And so now he's right on the cusp, and he's done it all. He's got it all. He's done it all except this, and he recognizes that. And so he'll win a Super Bowl at some point. It might be Sunday, but if it's not, he will win a Super Bowl before he's done.
Hall of Famer Troy Aikman joining us here on Sports Radio 1250 WSSP. On the other side of the field, Ben Roethlisberger certainly had some personal issues that he had to go through this year. Suspension from the NFL for four games. It seems as though he's back in the good graces. Does winning, from your experience, just solve everything? Because it seems as though he's won, and that egregious act that the commissioner came down on him for has been all but forgotten.
Well, I think that's a good point. You know, I think winning does shorten a lot of people's memories. And if this team had struggled, you know, it would be interesting to hear maybe how people were or what they thought then of Ben Roethlisberger and any transformations that he may have gone through. But there's no question that winning affects what people think of all of us, you know. But by all accounts, you know, I don't claim to know Ben Roethlisberger that well, but by all accounts, by those that do, say that it has made him a better person, and for that I'm very hopeful.
How much of a storyline will that be for you on your broadcast on Sunday?
It won't be. I can't speak for Joe, but it won't be a part of my thoughts at all. You know, I think the people that are tuning into this game, you know, most of them are aware. We'll certainly, you know, point out that he didn't play in the first several games, but beyond that, I think people are tuned in to watch a hell of a football game, and that's what they're going to get.
Talk about some of the things, some of the elements that are coming to the broadcast itself coming up on Sunday.
I'm sorry?
Some of the elements that Fox is bringing to the broadcast on Sunday.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know what all they're bringing, to be honest with you. I know there's going to be a lot more cameras, and it, you know, as far as what I will. How that will impact me, we've got a really great-looking high-definition board behind us that we don't typically get for a regular season game. So I saw that earlier today. That told me that this was a pretty important game. And we get a lot more cameras. Our director's job will become a little bit more difficult. But we'll throw all the bells and whistles at it. I'm just not sure what those bells and whistles are just yet.
Final thing for you. How special is it for this football game to be played in Dallas where you won three Super Bowl rings?
It's meaningful to me. I'm proud of this area. I'm proud to call this area home. There are wonderful people here. It's a wonderful place to live and raise a family. And I think for a franchise like the Dallas Cowboys to have done so much over the years and to have such a rich history, especially when it comes to Super Bowls, to finally have the opportunity then to host this game at this venue is pretty incredible. And now to have two teams that are on equal footing, and equal footing with the team that's hosting this game, I think it makes for a great combination and should be a hell of a game.
Troy, thanks so much.
All right, you bet.
All right, that was one half of the Buck and Aikman broadcasting team. Joe Buck, of course, on the play-by-play. I also had a chance to sit down with him. The Super Bowls, they never get old, do they?
No, and it seems like not only do they not get old, they get bigger and bigger and bigger, and now we're inside this stadium in Arlington, and there is a seat crammed in every open spot. I don't know if you went out there and walked around, but Troy and I were just up in the booth looking out. And whatever natural light used to come into this stadium is now being blocked by seats. So it's stunning how big this event gets. And this is the third one I've done, covering, 9 years or 8 years, whatever it is. And I can't tell you that it's ever been this big. It just feels bigger now than it's been even a couple years ago.
How does it compare to a World Series?
Well, I think the World Series, if you have the right matchup, can get there if you get to a Game 7, because then it all comes down to the next 3 hours. A Super Bowl is packing all of that into – you're packing basically a 7-game type dramatic event into 3 hours, 4 hours, whatever the game lasts. And so, you don't have a lot of opportunities, either as a player, as a broadcaster, as anybody, to get a mistake back. So it makes the stakes a little bit higher.
It seems as though your crew has been the exclusive home of Green Bay Packers football for the last couple of months.
Yeah.
It kind of seems that way. But what has impressed you the most about this run that you've been on? Because you've been with this team now for, a couple of months, it seems.
Yeah, this is going to be our sixth in a row. What's impressed me is that they've won games every different way you can, especially in the playoffs. Well, even going back to the last regular season game, it was a defensive slugfest, and they persevered to get in. Then they used the running game to beat Philly. Then they lit up the scoreboard with the passing game to beat Atlanta. And then that last game against Chicago, I would say they won that game with their defense after getting off to a fast start. So they can get you a lot of different ways, and it's good to have had a team for 5 weeks. It almost cuts my preparation in half because I've been there. I've seen all these moments, and I don't have to read about them and act on Sunday like I was there myself.
What impresses you the most about Aaron Rodgers?
His confidence. I think the guy's unflappable, and I think that really serves him well on the field. Certainly does off. He's the kind of guy you want to hang around, and talking to him in these production meetings is different than talking to a lot of quarterbacks. I mean, he'll tell you exactly what he wants to do. He'll tell you how he thinks he can beat another team. He's not guarded about that. He's not paranoid. And that speaks to his confidence. And I would think as an offensive player or as a Green Bay Packer to know that guy's leading us on Sunday, that'd be a heck of a feeling. And then you got the other side with a guy who's 28 who's already won two Super Bowls. I mean, that's the beauty of this game.
Same question about Mike McCarthy. What has impressed you the most about how he has gotten his team here after – really, they were left for dead after that Detroit loss.
Yeah, I mean, he's so thorough. When you talk to him, he usually starts with special teams. And he seems to have – you can just tell when a guy's got his hands around a ball club and he knows every aspect of it. And the way they self-scout and they look at their own trends and their tendencies, that's how they went into the Chicago game because they were so familiar with each other. I think he's got the players' respect. I think they fear him a little bit, but in a good way. And, it's not one of those situations where a team's walking over the coach, and they seem to listen to him, and you don't get a lot of the stories you get with other teams. They act right on and off the field.
When you look at this matchup between Green Bay and Pittsburgh, it seems as though they're pretty evenly matched, even though the Packers had 6 losses this season. Granted, by a combined 20 points, but nevertheless, 6 losses, close games they don't necessarily do and haven't historically, with Aaron Rodgers as quarterback, done all that well in. How do you see this game matching up? Because, again, when you take a look at strength versus strength, weakness versus weakness, it matches up pretty favorably.
It does, and that's why everybody says, well, we get a prediction from you, but I know you don't want to make a prediction. I can tell you, if I was in a situation where I had to make a pick, I don't know that I would be comfortable saying, well, this team I think will definitely win. I could I could see Green Bay lighting it up on offense. I could see Pittsburgh shutting them down with their defense. I could see Pittsburgh running the ball well. I can see, you know, them beefing up the defensive line and stopping the run better for Green Bay. I don't know. I mean, it's going to come down to a mistake. It's going to come down to a punt return, or it's going to come down to a bad throw, or, you know, whatever, a ball getting knocked out on the way to the end zone. It's going to be one of those, I think, which for an announcer is those are the fun games to do if it turns out to be that like that.
All right, I can't ask you about a prediction for the game, but I will ask you a prediction about the other story that has kind of been looming over this entire Super Bowl, and that, of course, is the labor situation. Any prediction on where that albatross might be headed with billionaires arguing with millionaires?
Yeah, you know, that's the main question. I mean, once the final horn sounds on Sunday, now the clock starts ticking, and we're looking at really a short window to get a lot of issues resolved. So I'd be stunned if they get something done before the first part of March. But they're going to have the draft, and you have to hope that they figure out a way to avoid what would be a travesty, which is to throw a stick in the spokes of this bike and make it just flip over, because it's just going too good right now. You know, you hope that each side gives a little and they meet in the middle, and you know, the regular people don't care. They don't want to listen to it. They don't want to hear about what they're haggling over. Just figure out a way to get it done. I'm in this business. That's how I feel. Mm-hmm. And whatever the deal is, and go forward.
Final thing for you, as far as this Super Bowl is concerned, and as far as this whole week is concerned, you've got the broadcast. It seems as though it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger every year. What do fans have to look forward to when they see it in Milwaukee on Fox 6?
Yeah, you know, I think hopefully just a solid game. I mean, we're not gonna have like any crazy stuff go on. We're just gonna try and get on the air and off the air clean, and in the middle, not mess it up. I mean, if this game can't sell itself with what we're presenting with the Steelers and the Packers on Sunday, then we're all in trouble. So to try to bring in like some sort of circus act just to get everybody's attention, I think that's a trap. And, you know, we're just going to do what we've done. If it's good enough for the NFC Championship game, it's got to be good enough for what's coming up on Sunday.
And the circus is here at Media Day today.
Yeah, so. Oh, yeah. Well, that's for sure. I mean, you don't have to look far to find somebody who's
wearing a
trying
cape
to stand out, or wear a cape or a big cardboard cutout box around their head. So I'm glad you didn't wear yours this year.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Joe, thanks very much. Appreciate
all right,
the time.
Sure.
Fox Sports play-by-play man Joe Buck, who was, of course, on the call 10 years ago this weekend, and he and Troy Aikman. Look, I know they get a lot of grief from Packers fans. I think they do a fantastic job. And when Buck and Aikman and Aaron Andrews are on your game, it means it's the most important game on the Fox schedule. And the Packers get a lot of those games. So, again, if you want to listen to Wayne Larrivee and Larry McCarron do the call over on WTMJ, knock yourself out. Go ahead and do that. Most people still watch it on television. I think Buck and Aikman do a great job. And no, they don't hate the Packers any more or any less than any other team. There's a reason that they've been doing what they've been doing for as long as they've been doing it. I would say the same thing about another guy that I did get a chance to catch up with on Super Bowl week as well. He's got and still updates the book every year. But he had just put out a book of all of the Super Bowls that had been played up until Super Bowl 45. So it was 1 through 44, the legendary, the Hall of Famer, late of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, longtime scribe Bob McGinn. Bob, how much different is this Super Bowl for you as opposed to other Super Bowls in the past where your team that you cover on a day in and day out basis isn't there?
Doug, there's a lot more pressure on Tom Silverstein and myself, you know, the main beat guys with Gary D'Amato and Laurie. You know, the national press is here, and everybody's looking for a scoop, the story. It's a bit tough. I mean, generally I'm here covering the game and two other teams, and I'm just building contacts and writing stories. But this is different, and we're highly organized this year. Mike Davis, the new sports editor, has a great plan for us, so that certainly helps.
As far as the storylines from this week, it seems to be one that's taken on a life of its own, and that, of course, is the weather. But it has affected the Packers, at least as far as their practice schedule and where they're practicing, as well as the special teams guys. Maybe a little bit of an edge for the kicker and the punter, Tim Maste and Mason Crosby, getting to the stadium a little bit early?
True, that helped them, but I know the Steelers specialists were going to be there. Green Bay was there at 11, and I think the Steelers were there at 12, so I think that probably evened out. And in terms of facilities, the Packers were raving about this high school thing at Highland Park. So, you know, the Steelers have TCU college facility, but I don't think that's too much of an edge.
Okay, as far as the weather itself, does that have anything to do with anything other than the media complaining about it? Because that seems to be something that has kind of taken on a life of its own.
I don't think so, Doug. Personally, I live in Green Bay. I'm just glad to get the heck out of there this week after the horror stories I'm hearing.
Bob McKinn joining us here on Sports Radio 1250 WSSB. As for this matchup, as for this game itself, it seems to be two really good teams playing really good football right now. Maybe seems like an obvious statement, but the Packers, by all intents and purposes, they've been playing playoff football instead of for three games the last five.
Yeah, they have. And really, they're outstanding at New England with Flynn and without Colin Jenkins. So, you know, you kind of wonder if law of averages, perhaps, if they can continue this streak going. And was it six in a row? Do they have a seventh in them? Yeah, they do, but they're going to have to play well to do it. Because I think if they play average, they're going to lose the game. I think the Steelers are a solid outfit. They've won four in a row. So, not going to be an average team winning this game, that's for sure.
As far as experience is concerned, especially experience in the postseason, Ben Roethlisberger, I believe, is 12-1 or 12-2 in his postseason career. Mike Tomlin is 5-1 as a head coach. He's got a Super Bowl ring as a head coach and as an assistant. They've been battle-tested. How much does that play into this week?
Significant, I think so. Yeah, they've won two, and you got a core of 10 players for the Steelers who have been around these things. You got really a veteran coaching staff. I think that's an edge. I do. I think Green Bay has the edge in talent, so I think those two factors maybe even balance it out, and this is almost a pick 'em kind of a game.
As far as the Packers, the number six seed, but they've only lost, you know, their six games by a combined 20 points. They've never trailed by more than seven at any point this season. That having been said, they still do have six losses on their docket this year. What is it about the close game that hinders this team?
You know, they've missed some kicks. Crosby's, you know, his record in the clutch is not great. They've been unable to close out some games with their four-minute offense. That's been a factor. They've given up some things on defense at the end of games, as they did in Pittsburgh last December of 09. So, you know, McCarthy's record in close games decided by four or fewer is 5-16. So that's very real.
Bob McGinn here on Sports Radio 1250 WSSB. As for the Steelers, what do they do exceptionally well that the Packers have to key up on as far as the matchups are concerned?
They're physical. I wrote about that the other day, and the Packers kind of poo-pooed it, but I don't care. That outfit gets after you on both sides of the ball. Their offensive line has problems, but everybody you talk to here, and when you watch that tape, those guys play hard on that Steeler offensive line. Even the new center, Ligurski. I mean, he's not Marquise Pouncey, but he's not that bad. They're going to shut down the run. I mean, James Harrison, he's the strongest player on that roster. I talked to their strength coach again this week. He said the same thing as he did in 08, pound for pound. The guy is incredible. He's up to 260. He's listed at 242. He's a brute. And you got power on both sides of the line, Casey Hampton. You know, Green Bay says they're a physical team, and I think they're going to have to prove it. They're going to have to run the ball to an extent.
You made the statement in the paper and in online at jsonline.com as well as in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that we could be seeing the start of a dynasty. A lot of people have said that that's maybe difficult to say before this team has won one. What did you mean by that?
Just looking at their ages, the ages of the star players, the people who decide the games, the age of the head coach, the mindset of the general manager, the facilities, the fans, the schemes. I don't think Dom Capers is going anywhere. I think it's all there for a sustained run. Now, it may not be Super Bowls, but they're going to be in the equation. I think I kind of see them dominating the NFC North for 3, 4, 5 years, barring an injury to Rodgers. They have fantastic depth. Now, having said that, we all really know nothing. It's the most unpredictable sport in anywhere. And they could get hammered this week. They could finish 6-10. These things happen in the NFL. But as far as we know right now, I bet my life that they're not going to be going anywhere. They're going to be around for quite a while.
What does it say about the NFL right now that in the last 10 years there have been 10 different teams that have represented the NFC in the Super Bowl?
Super Bowl hangover. Really hard to come back. I picked the Saints to win it all this year. I'll never do it again. If Green Bay wins, I'm pretty confident I won't pick them to win it again next year. This thing is real, you know. especially in New Orleans last year. I mean, those parades and the banquets, you know, it was after the Katrina deal, it just meant everything. And it affects players. And I really watched and read a lot about what Sean Payton tried to do. He couldn't conquer it. He got beat out in Seattle, you know. Things happen. Stuff happens. It's tough.
Is that what happened maybe in Super Bowl 32? I know it's, you know, 13 years ago, but the Packers were a prohibitive favorite going into that game against the Broncos in San Diego.
Yeah, I didn't sense overconfidence. And they played well that year, Doug. They were 13-3, as they were in 96. In retrospect, that was a 14-point spread. It should have probably been about 3. I mean, Denver had a good club. I didn't pick up on it. The national media didn't really pick up on it. So I think it's easier to overcome this hangover in Green Bay where there's limited distractions. And I don't think that team was fat-headed in 97. They just got beat.
Bob McGinn joining us here on Sports Radio 1250. Of course, you can read him at jsonline.com as well as in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You've covered a lot of these Super Bowls. How much have they changed from when you started covering the Super Bowl to where we are right now among hundreds upon thousands of media members in this very room?
So I think Radio Row this year is probably 85 stations, Doug. And when my first game was in January of 84, Raiders, Redskins, there was no Radio Row. And the first I ever saw radio stations doing talk shows from a Super Bowl site, probably 1990, 91, in that range. And he just kind of laughed at it, you know. I mean, by that point, newspapers were dominant, and, you know, the size of the newspaper media room was massive. Well, now this room's as big as the newspaper room, you know. It's really changed, and I appreciate what you guys do, definitely.
How much do you hate Media Day, though?
You know,
I kind of said it all.
You know, Doug, I mean, people who read me, they know me. I mean, I'm just kind of tunnel vision, and I just work the edges. All I'm trying to do is get one-on-ones with you know, I'm not going to get the star players at Media Day, but I'm going to get my assistant coaches, and I'm going to get the lower-level starters or the nickelback situational subs. So it's fine with me. I'm kind of oblivious to that, and I just do my own thing.
All right, Bob McGinn joining us on Sports Radio 1250 WSSB. Speaking of the Super Bowl book that you've got out as well. Tell us a little bit about that and some of your experiences that you've had, both writing the book and anything that you can take from this year to maybe put in the next updated volume.
Thanks a lot for mentioning it, Doug. It's called The Ultimate Super Bowl Book. Came out in 2009. Long stories on the first 43 games. Told from a perspective on why this game was won, you know, not the stars, not with the stories of the stars or the quarterbacks. That's all been told. I just try to stay away from that. Focus on X's and O's. I think there's millions of people out there who are really interested in what happens on that field, who are, you know, way beyond getting underneath the hype. And I know Packer fans are like that. I hear from them all the time, and they like what we do on the team. So I just took my team approach to the whole league. I've ran into all kinds of people who wanted to talk about these things, you know? Why these plays failed? I mean, who blew coverages? And so that's kind of the thrust of the book. And if you don't mind me mentioning, anybody would like a personalized copy, send me an email, bmcginn@journalsentinel.com. It's under my byline. We'll take care of you.
All right, sounds good. I may get one myself. As a matter of fact, I'd love that. Final question for you, having covered as many Super Bowls as you have, how has this grown into not only the sporting event, but just the cultural event that it has become? Because it's not just NFL luminaries that are wandering around this room, but you've got celebrities, actors, actresses, models, you name it, they're here, and it has become the biggest sporting event on an annual basis in the world. I mean, the Olympics are every 4 years, the World Cup is every 4 years, this is every year.
You know, it comes at a perfect time. Half the country's under snow and ice, you know. It's a dead of winter. There's nothing going on. So it comes on Sunday afternoon. The NFL's very smart on these kind of things. They're a PR machine. They know how to do it. It's like the 4th of July, you know. It's become almost America's national holiday. Now, again, in my book, Doug, there's none of that in the book, right? I'm just trying to be a pure football standpoint, but I hear what you're saying, and it is larger than life.
Longtime Packers writer, Hall of Fame writer Bob McGinn, who I had a chance to sit down and talk with at Super Bowl week a decade ago as well. And Super Bowl week is, yeah, about football. And yeah, it's about a game, but it's about so much more than that. And I got a chance to meet longtime entertainment reporter Maria Menounos.
You're out at Media Day. I saw you out there. You're on Radio Row today trying to, I guess, talk to not only football players, but also you're covering the party aspect, I suppose, of this cultural event.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Sports and entertainment are kind of meshing together and have been for a while. And I think what went on at Media Day even proves that point further. When you see both teams that came out to have fun. You know, Hines Ward had a wig on. The guys were, you know, playful, where normally when I'm here, and I've been here, I don't know, the last, like, 10 years, you know, they're a little more serious and they, you know, are reserved. And when I have to go in and ask the silly entertainment questions like Snooki or JWoww or Situation or DJ Pauly D, they kind of look at you and they're like, really, you're asking me this on the biggest day of Super Bowl of football? So now, you know, when I was there yesterday or the day before, they were down to play. So I think that that's, it's pretty evident how much they're meshing. And the parties are a big, big part of Super Bowl. Unfortunately, the weather, I think, is going to hamper some of these parties to a degree, because I know, being a fashionista myself, I'm trying to figure out how the hell I can put on tights and boots and, like, scarves to be warm. And usually Super Bowl parties are about wearing the least amount you can. So I've got all these, like, cute dresses that I'm now figuring out how to transform into warm fleece or long underwear or something.
What are some of the parties that you're most looking forward to? I know that the Black Eyed Peas have a party coming up. I know P. Diddy has a party coming up as well. Are those the big ones that you're focused on, or are there some of the other ones?
Well, I've learned from the best. There's about 5, 6, 7 parties a night. You have to pick like 2 or 3 realistically and just stick to those. So I think the ones I have coming up for Friday night. Tonight I'm hosting the EA Madden Bowl game, so that'll be fun. That party. And then Friday night, I'm doing Sports Illustrated and ESPN. Saturday night, I'm going to the Audi dinner, Maxim, and the Axe party. And maybe one more in between, because Kevin Dillon's a friend of mine and invited me, and I'm like, ah, I don't know if I can squeeze in another party, but I'm sure going to try.
Speaking of Kevin Dillon, of course, Johnny Drama on Entourage. Had a couple of cameos over the last couple of years on Entourage. Can we expect to see you in the final season of Entourage?
I don't think I'm coming back. Yeah, I wish I could.
You're not going to tell Sean off again?
Oh, my God, that was so fun. Do you know how hard it was for me to swear like that? And by the way, I do have a bit of a potty mouth in real life. But to say that to someone, I've never said that to anyone.
It's acting.
Like, you say the word, like, in response to, like, you know, stubbing your toe or something. Mm. But I've never said F you to anyone, ever. And it was really hard.
It was fun for the rest of us.
Yeah,
I've got to tell you. As far as how much this is growing, you say you've been here for about 10 years or so covering the Super Bowl.
Maybe nine years, I think. I was here for the first... Well, not here physically, but I was at the first Patriots Super Bowl win. I think that was 2001.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So I've been covering ever since.
Okay.
I've missed a few here or there, but...
How much has it changed? How much has it grown from not only the football aspect, which, of course, we've been covering all week long, but as far as, like, the media coverage outside of traditional sports media?
You know, I definitely was not in this world when I first covered it in 2001. I worked for Channel One News, so I wasn't aware of, like, all the gifting suites and the parties. I was, like, 21 years old and then 22 or something. I had no idea what was going on. But I think, you know, from the time I was at Entertainment Tonight and now at Access, I think it's definitely grown. And like I said, I think entertainment and sports go hand in hand now. So I definitely see a lot more... You know, cutie reporters at Media Day with their cute little outfits asking, like, the same questions I'm asking of people. So it's funny.
And obviously you're a big sports fan as well, growing up in the Boston area. I know the Patriots aren't here, but do you have a prediction for the game on Sunday?
You know, when we played Green Bay just a few weeks ago, they brought us to the fourth quarter with their backup quarterback. And so at first I thought it was going to be the Steelers. And I said that because of Aaron Rodgers' situation. You know, I was like, if he takes another hit, they're going to have to pull him. And then I started saying, you know what? If they do pull him, the backup's really good. So I think Green Bay's going to do it.
Green Bay? All right. Yeah. Our listeners certainly will be happy.
I think it'll be tight. But I thought the Patriots were going to blow out the Jets. So who am I to give a prediction at this point?
We'll take it. I think all of our listeners will take it as long as you're picking Green Bay.
All I know is any fan out there, as a devastated fan myself, know that at any moment anything can happen. And being a diehard fan, I've had it happen to me a few times now. and I don't ever want that feeling again. So just be cautiously optimistic about your team.
Maria, thanks so much for the time. Enjoy the game. Enjoy
Thank
the rest
you.
Of the festivities.
Thank you so much.
Maria Menounos couldn't have been nicer and was just a fantastic, fun interview both before and after what you just heard as well. So thanks to Maria Menounos for joining me a decade ago. All right, so that was before the game. After the game, in the locker room, I caught up with some of the guys that had moments before just been awarded the Lombardi Trophy. Here's the order of the folks that you're going to hear from. Packers president Mark Murphy, then offensive coordinator Joe Philbin, then defensive coordinator Dom Capers, and then I finished things up with former Packers president, and he's still around, and he's still one of the greatest gentlemen and one of the most important figures in Packers history, the great Bob Harlan. Packers president Mark Murphy joining us here inside the jubilant, victorious Packers locker room. It's quite a scene in here.
Oh, this is great. Yeah, I'd like to get used to this, coming down to locker room celebrations after championships.
Talk about the organization, what the victory tonight means to the Green Bay Packers.
It means everything. You know, that we're a very unique organization across the league, and we got great history and tradition. We have more world championships than any other team in the league, and bring our 13th, our lucky 13th, bring the Lombardi Trophy back to Green Bay is really special.
Talk about, this organization, as you mentioned, is rather unique. But, of course, coming into this game, the week leading up to it, there's been so much said about the labor situation. Not to damper what's going on tonight, but it's something that's on everybody's mind. Where do you think things are headed?
Well, it's not on my mind right now. But, we've got a month, a little over a month, or just about a month until the agreement expires, and hopefully both sides can come together and both really give some serious effort to negotiate and reach an agreement.
When you took over as Packers president and CEO, you inherited your general manager, you inherited your head coach. A lot of guys in a position such as yours have the thought of maybe I want to bring in my own guys. Why did you resist that at the time?
Because of the quality of the people. I have tremendous confidence in both Ted and Mike. And just as important, they really work well together. And obviously we win a Super Bowl, it looks pretty good, but I felt very confident that we're in good hands with both of them.
As far as Ted Thompson is concerned, there's been so much said. When everything was going through with the Brett Favre situation, a lot of fans were very unhappy. How many phone calls did you get? How many messages did you get about that decision? And a lot, I can tell.
I can't even count how many. But it was a tough time for the organization. Looking back on it, it was very early in my tenure, and I think it was a time and an opportunity for Ted and Mike and I to really come together, work together, and I think as you look back on it, it's really been instrumental in terms of how we've worked together over the last two or three years, and obviously. It's really helpful that Aaron Rodgers is such a good quarterback. Yeah.
Super Bowl MVP, that's not bad. Now, a lot of people have said that the only thing that was missing from Aaron's resume was being a Super Bowl winning quarterback. Now, in your mind, is he in the same category as the Bradys and the Mannings and the Breezes, et cetera, et cetera?
I think he's been an elite quarterback for a number of years and played at a really high level this year. And I'd like to see him win a number of Super Bowls. But now I'm excited about the future with him as our quarterback.
Talk about what's coming up next. I guess the parade is on Tuesday. Is that?
Yeah. Well, we get in tomorrow, and there's going to be a parade or a route, for people to come out and watch the team as we go from the airport to Lambeau Field, and then the big event will be Tuesday afternoon at 4:00. In Lambeau Field, so that's going to be special.
And more information, of course, over at Packers.com, I would imagine.
Absolutely, yep. Well, we're going to we'll hopefully have a great crowd.
Mark, appreciate the time. Congratulations.
Thanks, Doug.
Joe, can you just talk about what this means to you, a Super Bowl champion offensive coordinator?
Well, very lucky to be a small part of this whole operation. I've been in Green Bay 8 years, and I was telling somebody when I flew to start my first day of work, I wrote down a list of 20 things I hoped to get accomplished when I came to Green Bay, and number one was to be a part of a Super Bowl championship team, and so So feel very fortunate, very blessed.
Talk about the development of Aaron Rodgers as a quarterback. 6 years into the league, 3 years as a starter, now he's a Super Bowl champion.
Well, he's obviously, number one, he's extremely talented. Number two, he's a very, very hard worker. And number three, he's got excellent leadership skill. And, you know, really Tom Clements deserves a lot of the credit for his development. Tom does a phenomenal job and, has worked with him on a daily basis. Obviously, Mike has a great reputation as a quarterback coach as well. So, Aaron's been a real pleasure to work with. Very happy for him to see him play as well as he has. Not surprised, but happy for him nonetheless.
Talk about the offensive performance as a whole tonight. Got off to a strong start, ended strong, had a little bit of a lull in the middle.
Yeah, a couple things we wanted to do was, number one, not turn the ball over. We felt like, the way our defense was playing, and if we held on to the football, we'd have a great chance of winning the game. We did that. We thought we had to do it. Really execute versus pressure was going to be a huge component of the game. And for majority of the time, I thought we did a pretty good job against their pressure. And, they're a great defense. Obviously, you're not the number one scoring defense and if you don't do a lot of things well. And they slowed us down for sure. But our guys made some plays, and especially, after that two-point conversion when the game was awful tight and we needed something, our guys stepped up and made some plays.
You've been here 8 years. Chad Clifton's been here for a long time. Man. Donald Driver's been here for a long time. What does this mean to them specifically, do you think?
I think a lot. I mentioned both of them, in Chicago and maybe last week before we came down here that it's special for those guys. They've invested an awful lot. They've made a lot of sacrifices physically. You make a lot of sacrifices with your family. And to see these guys at this stage of their career get an opportunity because, when you coach in Green Bay and you play in Green Bay, you know the expectations are you got to be a part of a championship team. And so for these guys to do that, very happy for them.
To a man, you went up to each member of the offensive line a couple of moments ago before we started the interview and congratulated them. Mm-hmm. What does that mean to you to be able to do that as their coach, to say congratulations on winning a Super Bowl championship?
Well, it's, there's 32 teams in the league. I think it's the, objective of everybody when they convene in August. And, to weather the storm like we did, the first half of Philadelphia, Ryan Grant goes down, who's rushed for over 1,000 yards for us for a couple years in a row. Jermichael Finley, who had a big, big year, goes down in the fourth or fifth game of the year. And, guys just kept plugging, just kept working. The thing you're happy about is they never lost faith and confidence in what they could do.
And then there's a guy like James Starks who stepped in late in the season and provided the running spark that you guys seemingly had been missing.
Made a real nice contribution. We knew very, very little about him. He had hardly practiced at all, and which was different, but... I think he started playing in the San Francisco game, really, which is, December 5th, maybe, is where he really got his first licks, I think. So, yes, it's just, like I said, team effort. Today Brett Swain makes a contribution, gets in the game, does some good things. So Jordy Nelson makes 9 catches, I think. We needed everybody, and they all pitched in.
Talk about Jordy's game a little bit more than the 9 catches. He really stepped up and seemed to be Aaron's favorite target.
He's a good football player. We're not necessarily surprised. Sometimes the coverage dictates how many opportunities you're going to have in a specific game and the game plan of the opponent. But, he really stepped up. He was kidding me there that, up in the press box you could hear me yelling at him on the drop. But, he played really well, played extremely well and made some big plays and, did a great job on that, in the fourth quarter when we scored that touchdown. Aaron, adjusted the protection and we got the route, a nice crossing route against the zone blitz and made a big play.
And Greg Jennings with a couple of touchdown catches tonight as well.
Huge, huge, and a phenomenal job on that third down play. It was a big, big play in the game and, did a great job.
Thanks, and congratulations.
Appreciate it.
Packers defensive coordinator Dom Capers, first of all, congratulations on the win.
Thank you very much.
What does this mean to you as a coach, having been in the league as long as you've been?
Well, it's very gratifying because you appreciate how hard it is to do. This is 25 years for me and my first time in the game and first opportunity to win a championship.
Talk about the job that your defense did tonight specifically, shutting down Pittsburgh's offense.
Tonight was kind of a microcosm of our whole season. All right. We lose Charles Woodson and Sam Shields, who are big in our game plan. You've seen what they've done for us through the playoffs. And so we had to cut our call sheet in half, kind of took us out of a lot of our man coverage calls. And yet the guys we put in there made plays and went in and did a good job, and we were able to make the plays to win the game. And that's kind of been the case through the whole season. You know, we've had to adapt and adjust, and we've got a real resilient bunch of guys.
Talk about Charles Woodson and what this win means to him, even though he wasn't able to play in the second half.
Well, he's the one guy that had been in the game, lost the game, so you knew he knows the hurt of being in this game and losing it. And he's given us great leadership throughout the playoffs. And the young guys, they look up to him, they respond to him. He's done a tremendous job, and I feel good about Wood finally getting that Super Bowl.
Talk about the defense as a whole this season because of the injuries. Just talk about overcoming adversity with the injuries.
Well, it's one of the things we've tried to never use that as an excuse. I mean, we went through some real ups and downs during the middle of the season. I mean, I remember playing the Minnesota Vikings with three defensive linemen, having to finish the game putting an outside linebacker a defensive end. And, you know, we played the Miami Dolphins, all right. I mean, we didn't, you know, it was – we had guys out there, okay. We go to New York and get a shutout, all right, and Howard Green, all right, plays 35 plays for us, and Eric Walden, okay, plays. Those guys have practiced 2 days with us, you know. So it's just you can go on and on again about the guys that we've put in there, and they've gone out, okay, and performed admirably for us.
There was about a 20-year period of some down years, but then Bob Harlan, who joins us here in the locker room, said that that wasn't good enough. How does this feel? You're not a day-to-day member of the organization, but still, you were kind of the guy that got all this rolling.
Well, I'm very proud of Ted Thompson and Mike McCarthy because, as you know, I hired Ted, and he followed Ron Wolf, and Ron gave us a lot of great years, and now Ted has given us those great years. And there were a lot of people who doubted Ted. I heard from those fans when we hired him that they weren't sure he was the right guy. And then when we went through the Brett Favre situation, some of the same fans called and said he wasn't the right guy, but I think Ted has proven he can build a football club. They overcame a lot of injuries, hung in there all year long. I think it's great football leadership, and I'm just very proud of the organization.
Is there any way to compare this to the Super Bowl championship back in January of 1997 after Super Bowl 31?
Yeah, I think there is because, you know, the two eras were built very similarly. When Ron Wolf came in, he hired the coach Mike Holmgren, got the great quarterback in Favre, and then Reggie White. That was the foundation. And now Ted comes in, he gets McCarthy as a coach, has the franchise quarterback in Aaron Rodgers, and then brings in Charles Woodson and Clay Matthews. They built their organizations in very similar fashions. They both had great success. They're both sound football people. And as you say, in the 70s and 80s, we only had four winning seasons. Last 20 years, we've only had four losing seasons. So those two men deserve the credit.
Talk about when you were talking a couple moments ago about how you heard from the fans. What was the message that you gave to them, that you sent to them to try to ease their worries?
I said that I had great faith in Ted Thompson being able to build a football club. I watched him grow under Ron Wolf. He was promoted twice by Ron, became Ron's right-hand man. When Mike Holmgren went to Seattle, the first person he wanted to take with him was Ted, and Ted built a Super Bowl team with the Seahawks. So when I hired him, I thought, you know, I know exactly what I'm getting. I'm getting a very sound football man who will build a great team for us. And I said, just give him time. He's going to prove himself. And I told people, I said, I really think Ted and Mike are the best combination, the strongest football combination we've had since Ron Wolf and Mike Holmgren in 1992.
Just talk about how special it is to bring the Lombardi Trophy back to Green Bay. You had the opportunity to do it 14 years ago, and here we are again.
It's huge. I tell you what, the thing that was so bad, you know, when we started free agency in the salary cap in the early 90s, papers around the country were saying the first franchise that's going to suffer is going to be Green Bay. It's too cold, too small. They never win. Nobody will want to go there. Ron Wolf and Ted Thompson have come in and proven that's not true at all. This is a great organization. You can win here, and I'm just very proud of where we are.
As far as where this league is headed now, obviously, there's some labor strife that's going on. Do you concern yourself with that at all, not being a day-to-day member of the organization?
No, I really don't. I'm optimistic they're going to find peace and keep going. I've got great faith in Roger Goodell. We've got the greatest sport going. I mean, you know, the stadiums are full. The TV ratings are high. We've got the sport that everybody else envies. We got the salary cap, the revenue sharing. So I'm just hopeful that the sides will get together very, very soon and we move forward as the best.
The great Bob Harlan. Before that, Dom Capers, Joe Philbin, and Mark Murphy inside the victorious Packers locker room 10 years ago. So it's been a decade. the Packers should have been back at some point within the last 10 years, but it didn't happen. Should have happened in 2014, but they stopped playing football with 5 minutes left to play in Seattle. Could have happened in 2016. They were a little bit banged up in the defensive secondary. Aaron Rodgers didn't have a particularly great game against the Atlanta Falcons. That was when they were trying to, and I quote, run the table. Last 2 years in the NFC Championship game, one of those years, 2 years ago, well, 2 seasons ago, I guess I should say, after the 2019 season in San Francisco, I don't think anybody on the planet thought that the Packers were going to win that game, and they didn't. They got absolutely manhandled by a better football team. That's the only one of those four that I don't really have any consternation with whatsoever. They got their asses handed to them because the 49ers were just that much better than the Packers were, both on paper and on the field that day. This past year, this is the one that's going to stick in Packers fans' craws, and it should. Because this is the one where the Packers had the opportunity to go back to the Super Bowl, the 10-year anniversary of the last time that they went to the Super Bowl, and they couldn't close for a number of different reasons. They didn't play particularly well. Neither did the Buccaneers, and that's the one thing that I'm always going to look back on and, you know, think about those missed opportunities. Whether it was the missed opportunity of Aaron Rodgers not trying to run the ball in when there was a clear lane on third and goal from the 8-yard line, whether it was Matt LaFleur's decision to kick the field goal there as opposed to going for it on fourth and goal from the 8. Whether it was Mike Pettine and his terrible defensive schemes that led to a couple of touchdowns. Whether it was Kevin King and his awful game, probably his last game in a Packers uniform. There are a number of things that you're going to think about from this NFC Championship game. And it's just, the opportunity was there. It was just right in front of the Packers. And they couldn't do it. Will they do it in 2021? Even though Aaron Rodgers just won the MVP award at the NFL Honors, the odds are continuing to stack against Green Bay. And the odds are continuing to stack against Green Bay because Father Time continues to march on. Even in a pandemic, even when Aaron Rodgers wins another MVP award, his third, which kind of cements him as one of the top 5 quarterbacks, top 6 quarterbacks of all time in NFL history. He's going to be 38 in a year. Now, Tom Brady continues to do it, but he's like a pink unicorn. Just doesn't exist. And maybe Aaron Rodgers can continue to do it for the next several years. Maybe Jordan Love is going to be completely irrelevant as a Green Bay Packer. Maybe that's going to be a wasted first-round draft pick. I don't know. It's impossible to sit here the weekend of the Super Bowl and say what's going to happen in a year or two or three. A year ago, if you would have told me that Aaron Rodgers was about to win another MVP award, I would have thought you were crazy. And yet here we are. And he'd be maybe engaged to an actress. You know, a year ago, it was all about Danica Patrick. If you would have told me a year ago that Aaron and Danica would have been engaged, I would have, okay, that tracks. But an actress that we just found out like 3 days ago that they were even a thing? Is this real? So you never know. That'll do it for this edition of the Doug Russell Podcast. We will see you for a Super Bowl recap. We'll also talk some Bucks basketball and the fading chances of the Marquette Golden Eagles as they lost another one over the weekend as well. And what does the future hold for Steve Wojciechowski? We'll dive into that this week on the Doug Russell Podcast as well. Stay warm. If you're in Wisconsin, for goodness sakes, stay inside as much as you can because it is freezing out there. We'll try to warm you up right here on the Doug Russell Podcast throughout the week. Happy Super Bowl!